Hi, everyone. Welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. I'm Langdon DeMint.
And I'm Julian Taylor.
And welcome to our podcast. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. I'm Langdon DeMint, here with my dear compadre, Julio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Yes, Julian Taylor, the other bald guy in a truly global podcast where we recognize you wherever you are in your working day.
Exactly. It's kind of like the Truman Show. And in case I don't see you, good afternoon and good evening.
Oh, and in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
I love the Truman Show. Love the Truman Show. Yeah.
So let's chat about the new year.
Yep.
And
2025.
The old year.
Can't believe it's 2025. Yeah.
It is funny how I feel like as you get older, you know, you always hear that, but it is humorous how as you get older, the time really goes faster.
And I'm older than you. It's like going.
Yeah, I mean, it is. You try to live in the moment more, not to sound whatever, but man, crap flies. So what, as we, I think maybe we don't want to do the normal trend per se, but maybe we have a little discussion on 2024, some crucial things we saw, and then what that looks like for 2025. What do you think?
The trend that scares me most from this year is actually the fact that I think both in the US and the UK, the trends for fatalities actually showed a slight blip upwards. So to me, that is just a resounding sort of message to us that we've still got a really big job to do here. And when you think about trends of the last year, maybe the last 2 years, ESG is the thing, isn't it? Everybody's talking about ESG. A lot of businesses don't know what to do with ESG. My one fear with ESG is it deflects people from important things. So it deflects people from that focus on things like serious incidents and fatalities. Because they get distracted by other elements of ESG. And I think it's in 2025, it's how we get the focus firmly back on what are the things that are going to help us to drive better behaviors around safety so we can start to get that number going down again.
Jules, that was so eloquently put. And I mean that in seriousness. Because
Thank
I think
you.
that is my sentiment without being emotional. I think we get so caught up we do get very caught up in the environmental aspect and how we can do it. One of the best things we can do is protect our people, because if we protect the world and we don't protect our people, you know, so I think that's an excellent point. And you also brought up another great point that we can share as of when this is being recorded versus when this is going to be released. The new BLS data has come out in the States for fatalities, and there was actually a decrease, which is good.
Good.
But it went from last year was, well, always get this backwards.
For this side of the pond, can you just explain what the BLS data is?
Yes. So Bureau of Labor Statistics, that's basically all the workplace statistics that we have in the States. Very similar to when the HSE does their release, which theirs, I think, is at the beginning of the year, if I recall correctly. But all that data for, it could be workplace injuries, like your non-fatal occupational injuries, illnesses, what led to those, meaning, was it, this is how you can determine your slip, trip, and falls, you know, whatever type of event, what time of day. So the Bureau of Labor Statistics is it's a governmental organization in the U.S. that really manages all of those trends or data lagging indicators at the end of the day. But where they did a release for fatal occupational injuries and illnesses, and they found that for 2022, make sure I'm getting my years right, 24 and 25, because it's always back a year. It's confusing. 2022, it was 54.86. And then, let's see, for 2023, it was 5,283. So a slight decrease, but still over that 5,000 mark. So what that equates to, a worker died every 99 minutes from a work-related injury. compared to 96 minutes. So we made it three extra minutes.
It's scary numbers, that, isn't it? It's really scary numbers. One of the things we've been talking about this year, and seems to be a trend, and it's something I'm going to advocate that we carry on talking about next year, is this whole piece around psychological safety. I don't know necessarily whether we maybe get rid of the psychological safety moniker, because it seems like a bit of a buzzword again. But actually understanding what we mean by psychologically safe, and if you really want to distill it and simplify it down, for me, it's that creation of a workplace where people feel able to challenge and to question and to raise their hand. They're in a safe, mentally safe place where they feel able to put their hand up. Because I still think we live in a world where people in the workplace maybe are faced with a dangerous situation, but they don't feel able to put their hand up and say stop, because they worry about what's going to be the ramifications if they say stop. I've got a potential guest for us for next year, couple of guests. I'm going to keep the names under wraps because I think I've not definitely got it organized yet, but it'd be great if we can get them on. A couple of guys that want to get on, and they talk about, I'm going to have to mumble this because it's a rude word and I don't like using rude words, but it's the moment. And it's actually when you're in that moment is being able to say stop. If you feel able to say stop, that's the sign of a good workplace, because the workplace aren't going to punish you. Even if it turns out that it wasn't an issue, because you've done the right thing. Yeah. That's one of the things we've got to create in 2025, is safe workplaces from the perspective of, it's safe for me to say something. Yeah.
Well, and I think also it's interesting, because we think of this psychological safety, and I think so many might not really, really understand what it is. And then it gets that interesting rap of, you know, is it misconstrued from what it actually is? And then I think it's important to hit on what are those aspects that can really be advantageous, because I totally agree. I think one of the biggest trends that we will see, and we have seen, and you'll see where I'm going with this, is the total worker health, meaning the mental health, the wellness, the well-being. Well, how does that tie into your actual psychological safety? Well, if I'm in a good mental state, I'm comfortable, you know, my outside work is going well, or outside life is going well, it's corresponding. Usually I'm probably going to be more apt to be in a positive role. So when I am at work, I feel more psychological safe, meaning if I want to start the job when I'm fully ready, healthy and safe, I'm comfortable stopping work, I'm comfortable saying, you know, whatever, just bringing to the attention of something that's occurring, good, bad, indifferent, just bringing it to light. And that's part of that, to me, major engagement piece that we have to try to instill, because, you know, we talked about the fatalities, how they've dipped a little bit, but still very, very high. If we continue doing the same thing we've been doing and expect different results, we're probably not going to.
As somebody who wasn't Einstein said, that would be the definition of madness.
Yeah, truly. Could have been him, though. Who knows?
It could have, yeah.
Probably not, but maybe.
And I think it'd be really interesting, wouldn't it? And if there was some kind of data or statistics around how many incidents, or when you're looking at incidents, how many were actually affected by outside factors? So factors outside of the workplace. So issues at home, challenges that people were trying to deal with, divorce, whatever it might be. And actually that's then affected their performance in the workplace, that has led to some kind of an incident. That would be interesting. Yeah. And I think when you talk about psychological safety, it's interesting, because it brings you into a whole raft of other things, because Because when you start talking about psychological safety, it's about things like leadership and the behaviors of leadership. How do we coach and change those behaviors? One thing I've talked about this year is, and it's really simple little things sometimes, isn't it, from leaders. So, for example, when a leader rocks up on site and they go into a meeting, what's their behaviors? So I remember talking to a consultant who was going to a business to talk to them about behavioral safety, and he drove into the car park and it had a sign saying please reverse park. So he goes in, reverse parks. All the pedestrian walkways were marked out. So he gets on the pedestrian walkway and starts walking towards reception. Big Merc drives into the car park, drives forward facing into a parking space. Guy gets out, walks straight across the car park, ignoring the pedestrian way into reception. He gets into reception, signs in. The guy comes down who he's got the meeting with, and guess who it is? It's Mr. Merc. It's Mr. Merc driver. Yeah. But even more than that, even more than just not following the rules and demonstrating that they're important, how often do you see managers, supervisors, senior leaders go to a different site? They walk in, they go to the meeting room they're having the meeting in, have the meeting, walk out again and leave, and don't talk to anybody else whilst they're there. And simple little things like senior leadership, when they go for those meetings, instead of doing that, but going out maybe on the shop floor, and having a conversation with people, saying, how are you doing? Actually getting to know them, talking about what have you done around safety today. It might take them 5 minutes, but it just leaves that indelible impression that actually senior leadership care, and actually they care about safety. So you start thinking about, right, okay, this psychological safety thing, how do we start to do it? It can seem quite daunting on the face of it, but actually sometimes it's little things that start to make the difference. And then I suppose the other bit of it, and I think it was Ryan the other day was talking about it when we were talking to him, was talking about learning. How do we change the way we embed learning in an organization? Which I think is a good area.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's also a challenge because everything we're talking about, we're seeing a major demographic transition in work. And I think it seems that it all kind of ties together really from the standpoint of we are at a precipice, if you will, that we have people working longer than they ever have. So you have an aged workforce. But then you have the younger. No.
Like you?
I mean, then you have a lot younger that are coming in, and a lot of the viewpoints are vastly different. You know, that older generation you think of where I'll do my job hard, but sure we get it. And then the others who their importance, they want to be protected. But sometimes it seems like even their physical safety isn't realized as much as the mental and the environment and aspect. And we have to think we're all humans, all powerful tools. How can we, to what you're talking about, how can we ensure that we are connecting with both levels to ensure that we're maximizing what we're getting so that we can have those safe operations? We can have a psychologically safe and healthy workplace.
You know, the reality, Langdon, is I don't think there's any change. I think, bear with me here because that might sound completely irrational, but I don't think there's actually a change here. If you think about it, going back 40 years, people were talking about different learning styles. Hmm. And I think it's the same. It's really that same approach, isn't it? That we have different people with different ways that they're going to learn and take on board information. And what we've got to do is be cognizant of that. And Ryan was talking about how do we've moved from sort of 3-day training courses, 5-day training courses. We moved to e-learning. 2-hour long e-learnings, which still didn't work. And now we're kind of moving, we've moved towards sort of YouTube. And now I think we're moving towards TikTok, aren't we? But actually there's some really good opportunities there because it's so easily digestible. And actually it can be in the moment. And it's what we talk about, isn't it? It's that micro-learning that we talk about is rather than take people away from the workplace and try and force a whole bunch of information into them that they're not going to retain. How can we make it really accessible and easy at the workplace, at the point of doing something? So if I'm going to go and operate a piece of machinery, I can maybe scan a QR code. I go into a short learning. I do it. It's TikTok kind of length, or maybe slightly longer. Yeah. But it's really easily digestible. It's in my head. Then as soon as I go to do that, you'll carry out the operation. So I think that's one of the trends for next year is how do we just make learning more self-directed, more self-accessible so that we can just do it in the moment.
No, I think that's it makes sense. Because when you think about a lot of what we've been discussing, you think about, let's just think serious injury fatality, how that correlates to everything we've been discussing, because I think it all the trends tie together in essence. Some of the top which research is showing around precursors that lead to those serious injury fatalities, you think about it, workers not following safe work procedures. So meaning they are, but meaning they can't express maybe the most critical aspects of the task. They're not recognizing the hazards the way they're supposed to. They're deviating from the routine. Now, it could be a deviation that is needed, but there's still a deviation. Understanding the task, normalizing risk, some of those top 10. What does it all boil down to?
Yeah.
You're on this. What do you think? What does it all boil down to?
I'm going to let you give me the answer.
You don't know. Humans.
Humans. People,
right? So yeah. We have to figure out everything we're talking about. If we want to ensure truly a healthier, safer organization, we want to be as compliant or adhering to true ESG sustainability. It's ensuring that we're putting things in place to try to keep everybody, the workplace, the work environment, people.
We put people at the forefront. We said it at the same time. We put people at the forefront. Yeah. And I think Karen Hewitt, we're talking to Karen Hewitt, weren't we, the other day, and she put it really well. She talked about one thing for 2025 is working with the safety profession around soft skills. So actually they can become change agents. So but I think you make a really good point. It's almost back to my point I made earlier, which is the danger of these things like compliance and ESG is it just distracts us from actually people. That's where there's no incident, or incidents don't generally happen without people being involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. unless you're very unfortunate. Yeah. So it's actually about, okay, how do we bring people back to the forefront and help them just to be more cognizant of what's around them? Yeah.
Yep. So let's take a quick recap before we transition. So we have hit trends of psychological safety.
Yep.
ESG, serious injury and fatality.
Self-directed learning.
What about technology?
Well, I find this fascinating.
Yes, me too.
Because I like playing around with the AI side of things. And again, I wonder, I saw something, and it was a sales tool actually today that I was looking at. But I thought, actually, how fantastic would this be for safety? So in a sales scenario, what it was basically saying was, who are your potential customers? And you wake up in the morning and it's giving you prompts to say, have you thought about this? Have you thought about going and talking to them about this or providing them with this information? But actually, what a great safety tool. If we could have that kind of AI prompt that's coming through to people to say, your job role today is this. Have you thought about these safety issues? Yeah. So I think that there's definitely a place for AI, and I think it's scary how quickly it's developing. It's kind of gone from being this almost unreal thing that people were mooting could happen to all of a sudden it's happening in lots of places. I mean, you do a Google search these days, and you get an AI response, don't you? ChatGPT is, I think, is a really good tool. It's still, but it still needs human input, still needs human verification. But I think if we can start to use AI in that way, where it starts to give us that really valuable output, I think it's gonna, it could be, it's going to be great. And I think you can then associate it, almost link it into wearable technology, and into even things like CCTV systems to make observations. I think there's some really powerful opportunities moving forwards.
I think we have the same.
Should we get the cynical view now, ladies and gentlemen?
Jerk. I think there. It's not cynical. There's reservation. I think we're trying, which I guess that's maybe what we always try to do, probably. There's still the same problem, but we're trying to use different tools, different things to help us be better suited to manage every day. Let's just blanket it for a moment. I think right now, as an health and safety EHS professional, there's things that I see where honestly it can help. I think it can make a difference. There's aspects that I think it doesn't need to take the place of the human element. I can give an example. Actually, it's one of those, you know, you say yesterday, but when it comes out, this was actually a couple of weeks ago. So it's one of those Back to the Future moments.
You've got to come back with me. Where? Back to the Future.
I gave my boss man some images that I'd taken of hazardous scenarios, and he was testing it out, just kind of seeing how it could identify and sharing it. And honestly, from a hazard identification standpoint, it did very well. Now, these are pictures I know. I was there, you know, took a few of them, and I'd probably give it an A, honestly. Very, and he wasn't, if I recall correctly, the parameters he put weren't just as, you know, super extravagant, but it identified it. And then it gave a little bullet as to the rectification or whatnot. I wasn't crazy about what I read on the bullet. Now, I understand he could have put more into it to get it out. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but it does make you wonder from that, or from what you were talking about, how it can link into CCTV and it views a lift. Does it know how heavy that item is? No. But can it show a potential unsafe so it could identify it quick and maybe fix it before it leads to it? And it really didn't need to know that full-blown assessment. Sure, because I think it has a chance to help, because we go down, I don't know what you want to call them, but think about the UK HSE. They're, you know, y'all are very, when I say y'all, but you know what I mean. The UK is very risk assessment heavy. In the States, we have obviously standards, regulations for a lot of things as well. So I wonder, is it something that it's difficult to know? Okay, have I dotted my I? It's difficult to know some of that. So if it can help ensure that you are adhering to those things, that you are doing everything in place to try to create a healthier, safer workplace. Yeah, I think there's definitely going to be a place for these tools that can, you know, that can help create a safer workplace.
I think there's always that fear, isn't there, that it's going to take jobs away. Actually, I see it the opposite. I see it as actually it can help us to do those jobs more effectively. That's where I see some of the benefits of AI. It's certainly going to be an interesting year, isn't it? If you think how quickly it's progressed in the last 12 months, 2025 certainly is going to be an interesting year. And I think it possibly starts to make those wearable technologies, it starts to deliver on the potential of those that they've maybe not really delivered on to date. I think you might start to get more value out of those things.
I think no, I totally agree with that. I feel like we put so much more on a device that can tell me my heart rate, tell me that, oh, I'm about to be over this T shot, my heart's going up. We've put a lot more focus on those type than wearable devices such as, you know, and they exist. I'm not negating that, but like personal air monitors. So if something goes out, hey, you need to leave. And then we need to empower them. We have an overexposure, get out. Let's rectify that and keep that data. I think, I mean, that exists. I'm not negating it, but that ought to be something that instead of producing any of the old, everything we do is, or those new type items, so we can have that real time data, you know, for example, because illnesses, or excuse me, chronic potential adverse effects, they're a lot more at play than we give them credit for.
Yeah. It's that problem is the immediacy, isn't it? People, unless they can see blood, they don't panic about it. So, so it's changing that mentality. And like you say, again, it's part of that psychological safety almost that actually if that monitor does go off, I just walk out. And we deal with the consequences afterwards. It just makes me think of the classic fire alarm. How often do you hear a fire alarm going off in a building and everybody sits there waiting for the first person to move? Just that human reaction.
Just a drill.
We've got to change that human reaction, haven't we?
Well, I think that, to me, that really tallies up to what you just said was a great all-encompassing for everything we've been talking about. It doesn't matter your age, if you're older, younger, your side of viewpoints, political, you know, at the end of the day, everything we want to do as EHS professionals is ensure that going to work is healthy and safe as possible. The workplace is ensuring that they are providing a workplace healthy and safe, that we're not over polluting. We're not polluting, period. I say over polluting. We're not polluting. We're taking care of all that. And that's humans. That's hopefully you know, we talk about it from a negligence. That's do the right thing because it's the right thing and try to put that first. And I think when you do that, I don't think a lot of these issues that we talk about, I don't know that they would be as extreme as they would be. And a lot of time it is putting what you said at the very beginning, putting the emotional behind, because we can get carried away on emotions. I mean, I won't go down that rabbit hole, but we can make a lot of even incorrect assumptions if we get caught up on emotions without understanding all the facts. I mean, so sometimes it is trying to figure out what can we do to truly put the best foot forward for all. And I think that's where that human element comes into play, where we are the most powerful tools possible in the workplace because we can make those relevant, good decisions.
So my final point to wrap this up, I think, is trend for next year is same old for me, is leadership and worker engagement. I still don't believe that we have the levels of worker engagement around safety that we need. And I still don't think we've got the leadership engagement around safety that we need. And I think if you talk about those aims that you've got, which are absolutely the right aims, those are the two things that need to be in place if you're going to achieve them. So I think no matter where you're working, part of your strategy for next year is how do I coach and develop those two groups of people so that actually they understand why we're doing safety and what's the value of it to them and to themselves as individuals, but also to the organization.
Very nice. I think mine is trying to ensure that we don't continue doing the same thing and expect changes, because whether it's technology, whether it's, you know, SIFs are the perfect example of that. We think that, oh, if we put a focus on our slip, trip and falls, that's going to help the fatality. Well, no, that's what we've always done. And what it also shows is if you put a focus on slip, trip and falls and you're still having those STFs, is that working anyway? So think differently so that we can make potentially, hopefully better decisions. So I think that would be kind of my biggest trend, because really both of what we said, if we fine tune those, I think it would probably minimize and rectify a lot of the other trends that we're seeing for next year.
Makes a difference. Yeah. Creating a workplace where people feel able to stick their hand up. That's what we're trying to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Langdon. I will thank you, everybody, for listening. I'll let Langdon sign us out because he does it far better than I do.
Thanks, Julio. And I enjoyed our conversation today. Everyone, as we're thinking about the new year, as you're making your resolutions or just looking ahead, don't do a resolution, but just look ahead at what could we do differently? How can we drive better changes for ourselves, our families, our organizations? Remember to look at the past, learn from it, and then let's make decisions that will be better for tomorrow. So as you're going about your days, remember to stay healthy, stay safe, and ultimately, let's watch each other's back out there. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. Don't forget to follow and subscribe wherever you stream your podcast, or you can visit us at evotix.com.
And if you've liked today's podcast or you found some value from it, we'd really appreciate it if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review or a rating. It really means a lot to us. Thank you.